breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
I wish I could say good morning this morning, but it's not a good morning because, like a lot of mornings in this country, this year and probably every year going back 20 or 30 years, we're talking about a mass shooting, school shooting. So let me lay a baseline before I'm going to play a couple quick pieces of audio, just kind of set the scene. But yesterday in Nashville, an individual enters a school, Christian school, private school, 10:11 in the morning, enters the building. By 10:27, the shooter was dead. So clearly a significant and strong public safety response, well done. Probably saved lives. But I can't get past the other piece of this. Now, I've seen the video. This shooter, this woman, 28 years old, whose name I won't say, apparently wrote a manifesto. We'll learn at some point what that manifesto said, if it's not already out there. I didn't see it this morning. On a motive, trying to get some motive or understand a motive from a crazy person is probably a difficult task, whether it's written down or not. Three children, less than 10 years old, three adults. Not unlike all the other school shootings I've talked about on this show over the years. Columbine, Sandy Hook, Parkland, Uvalde. And I'm always looking at this in a different perspective, because I, as a local leader, had to deal with the mass shooting, but that's not the story. It's not about me. My question is always this. Anybody have the guts? Anybody have an idea how to slow this stuff down? I was chatting with a friend on Messenger last night who pointed to faith and mental health. Yeah, I get it. That's part of it. Always part of that, right? No sane person, right? At least by my definition, walks into a school and slaughters 9-year-olds. Shouldn't happen. Never should happen. I'm going to give you a little bit of NBC, just kind of paint the picture, and I'm, as always, interested in your response, 855-616-1620. But I want you to think from the... I don't want to have a conversation about guns. Guns are the agent, right? The weapon of choice. Whether it's an AR-15, assault-style weapon, I don't really care at this point, because I can guarantee you that if you outlaw something, whether it's an AR-15, assault weapons, they'll kill you with something else. That's a reality I think more people have to face. And this is from a gun owner who understands the Second Amendment. This is from NBC.
They were able to confront and kill the shooter, who fired at officers from a second floor window, but not before Hale fatally shot three children and three adults.
There's multiple victims down inside the school. Shooter is down now as well.
Authorities later searching Hale's home, finding two shotguns and other evidence as they investigate potential motives. Among the victims, the school's headmaster, Dr. Catherine Kuntz, 61-year-old substitute teacher Cynthia Peak, and 61-year-old custodian Mike Hill. The children, all just 9 years old, identified as Evelyn Decos, William Kenny, and Hallie Scruggs, the daughter of the lead pastor of Covenant Church. Avery Myrick's mother was teaching in her classroom when the shooter opened fire.
She said she was hiding in the closet and that there was shooting all over and just that she, like, loved us.
Many parents unsure their children would come home.
There were so many police cars, and then the ambulances started coming away from the school.
President Biden ordering flags to fly at half staff nationwide and urging Congress to pass a new assault weapons ban.
A little bit of the flavor of what was talked about last night. It was a dominant news story on most of the networks. There were other news stories, and we're going to certainly get to those on the show today. 855-616-1620. Having talked about this over and over and over again, there's always this question, well, what can we do? And the answer is a lot of things. It's not one thing. I think as a gun owner that with gun rights come responsibilities, and we failed miserably on that. We've allowed violent people to get their hands on weapons. If bad guys shouldn't have guns, we need to do all we can to make sure bad guys don't have guns. Now, in a situation like this, where apparently this woman didn't have a record, that's difficult to try to figure out what someone's going to do. So you have that reality. Mental health. Much talked about among politicians, but when it comes to putting the dollars to the programs, a lot harder to accomplish. I'm not here to argue about guns. Countries don't have guns, people find other ways to kill each other. But don't make an argument that we need more people with guns. We have plenty of guns, we have a lot of people with guns. If that's your standard, if that's your metric, it's failed miserably. Because, again, bottom line, kids slaughtered in school, not okay. And, of course, some of the people who do what I do, they're responsible for just ignoring the topic, not talking about it. That's the price of living in America, folks. People going to die. Or something similar. Not good enough. And there is not one answer, folks. There is not one easy to define answer. It's not going to be that easy. Nothing worth accomplishing ever is. But in this era of instant gratification, and I got to fix this right now, and who are you to tell me? The selfishness of the debates, the anger of this debate, not against the shooter, not per se, but don't take away my rights. I didn't shoot her. Or something similar. Bill joins us from Bristol. Hey, Bill, welcome to the show. Good morning on WTMJ.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, this just gets me, every time there's a school shooting, it gets me riled up because we keep trying to solve this the wrong way.
What's the right way, Bill? And tell me the right way.
Well, there are a lot of right ways, but there is one wrong way that we continually go to, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but right after school shootings, everybody clamors for better gun control. And so what happens is that you have all this rage, and you get some attorneys and the local politicians and local government leaders, they get together and they draft this great law that's going to control guns, and then it gets into the court system. And within a couple of years, it's knocked down, and you've wasted 2 or 3 years on something that you're not going to fix with gun control. So we need to take gun control completely off the table to solve this problem.
Okay, so what's left then in your mind? What would be one of your solutions or a couple of your solutions?
Well, you know, in the big picture, guns are the problem. So, but in order to solve school shootings, just look at school shootings and don't look at guns. And I don't, you're going to think I'm crazy. But let me ask you a question. Do we have a problem with shootings in prisons?
Not generally, no.
No. So I'm not saying turn the schools into prison, but what I'm saying is we do have a place where we have controlled the gun problem. So it can be done.
Bill, thanks for the call. I will respond to Bill before the break, and Ray, stay on the line. And if you want to join us, 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank Talk and Text line. I will agree on that point. How in the world schools have not fortified their entrances? Now, in this case, the shooter basically shot through a glass door, a couple glass doors, and got into the building. I don't know at this point if there is an SRO. I'm guessing not. Private school. I'm guessing they don't have any that kind of a presence. I will read for you after the break something that, and I'm not a fan of Ted Cruz at all, but something he proposed last year that got no debates. No airing. No hearings on school security and safety. But like so much else in politics, it was dead on arrival because the other side said it. In that case, a Republican said it to Democrats. That's a short-term answer. We'll take a break. You can join us, 855-616-1620. How are we going to fix this? And it's not good enough to pretend it's just something that happens in America because other countries have mental health problems. Trust me. They don't have the mass shootings we have. Other countries have all the same problems we have. They don't have the level of violence we see every day, and apparently we accept every day. I don't accept it. You shouldn't either. That's why we're talking about it. We're talking about the mass shooting yesterday in Nashville. 6 people killed at a private Christian school. I'll get to politicians in a second. Ray joins us from Illinois. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I said good morning. It's not a good morning because here we are again talking about another mass shooting. I don't have the full answer. I don't think any one person does. But I think one of the things we have got to not be afraid to do, we got to get rid of the stigma about mental health and not be afraid to talk about mental health, to help those people who need help. And yes, that may mean committing somebody for a period of time if they're really, really in a bad way. I am not saying all people that are dealing with mental illness are going to go out and be mass shooters. That's not the case at all. Most of them probably are not. But for those that need that help, we've got to not be afraid to talk about it and be willing to help them. And I disagree a bit with Bill. Gun control's got to be part of this discussion, but it is certainly not the only thing.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Ray. And to that gun piece, I'm not saying there shouldn't be some legislation related to guns. Look, there are people today in this country who are knowingly selling guns to people who have criminal records. They know it. The seller, or the buyer rather, certainly knows that they are often felons. And these transactions happen all the time. And I'm not even talking about mass shootings. I'm talking about everyday run-of-the-mill gun violence, which, frankly, to say that is somewhat astounding because that's the world we live in now, or at least the country we live in. The correct answer is going to be one that's complex. And it brings to me what I wanted to talk about in this piece. Look, I'm not a fan of Ted Cruz. He's a snarky know-it-all who frankly spends way too much time on social media. But last year, in response to the Uvalde school shooting, which was horrific, both in its actions and in the public safety response, horrific. Kids died that didn't need to die. Ted Cruz proposed the Securing Our Schools Act of 2022. Would have provided $15 billion to double the number of school resource officers. If you listen to the show, you know I'm a big fan of those. Big fan. A short-term answer is to have increased and enhanced security at every school building. I don't care what kind of school it is. We have money flowing out of the federal government for all kinds of things. But you can't ensure the safety of our kids in school? Shame on you. Oh, by the way, his Securing Our Schools Act would also have provided $10 billion to 15,000 mental health professionals for middle and high schools. That might matter, right? And almost $3 billion for physical security improvements on school campuses. This happened 4 months after Uvalde's elementary school shooting left 19 students dead, 2 teachers dead, and 17 others injured. That's what Ted Cruz did. Didn't get a hearing. So stop with the, there's nothing we can do. That's something we could have done. We chose not to. Jeff joins us from Whitewater. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm 40 years old. I've been around these school shootings since I was a junior in high school, 2000. I just feel like we need to we need to make these schools, like I think the one caller said, almost like prison-like. And that's a horrible thing to say. Also, I feel like we need to up the age, maybe 25. I mean, I understand you can go to the Army and shoot a gun, but, hey, you know, you're trained to shoot a gun at 18 in the Army. Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jeff. Look, everyone has an idea about guns. And I can guarantee you that there'll be so much pushback on the 25 proposal that Jeff just mentioned that it would never happen. We know that states like Florida, they raised the age. I was trying to look it up during the break there. But many states have responded to mass shootings in their state by changing subtly the gun laws. And as a gun owner and a gun rights defender, I still understand there's things we can do. There is no way, and these have been dumbed down in state after state. You can look it up if you want to. I'm not going to go through the long list. Red flag laws, trying to control who has access to firearms based on the crimes they commit. All of these things have been dumbed down, allowing people to conceal carry, open carry, with no rules, no training. I understand why these are happening. It's a push to look at the constitutional guarantees of the Second Amendment and say there should be no rules. But, of course, there are rules. Can't bring loaded gun on a, you can't bring a gun on a plane, right? Can't bring a gun into most schools, right? Can't carry a bazooka along the parade route on the 4th of July in your neighborhood, right? There are already restrictions. So let's not pretend that the Second Amendment is absolute. It's not. And I'm going to get to the politicians here because I just highlighted that proposal from Ted Cruz as an example of there is a conservative Republican trying to do something about it. It got no attention, no serious discussion because they didn't like it. It didn't go far enough. It wasn't attached to a ban on whatever kind of weapon you want to pick, assault style, AR-50, whatever it is. That's the lazy argument. Of course school security matters. If a glass door is not good enough, then you have to put in a hardened steel door that somebody can't shoot their way through. Or at least if they try, it's going to take a little bit longer. I don't know if I said this at the beginning or not. The shooter enters the building at 10:11. They're dead by 10:27. Unless my math's wrong, that's 16 minutes. That's pretty effective. That's a tremendous public safety response. But, end of the day, six people dead. Can't happen. We'll take a break. Neil, you're up on the line from Plymouth. Lots of texts as well. We'll continue the conversation around the bottom of the hour news. You're listening to WTMJ. Another day, another school shooting. As sad as that is, that's become the tone of the conversation. Almost business as usual. But that business as usual means that children are being slaughtered in their classrooms. And having met parents from Sandy Hook, you have no idea what that means to a parent. You may think you do. You don't have any idea. You're not even close to understanding that. So don't pretend you can. We'll get Neil in here before the bottom of the hour news. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Yeah, good morning.
What do you think?
I'm thinking one of the things, of course, it's going to be a long-term solution, but we need to focus and take a look at education and advertisement to have some type of congressional utilization of psychologists to look at what is pushing everyone in the right direction or the wrong direction as far as the, you know, human rights aspects, what is getting people so agitated and so angry, and then focus on eliminating the advertisement and glorification of the values that are driving people, and then educationally having a consistent curriculum in all schools that's almost mandatory. What drives, what do you do to make your peers as you're growing up that upset, because the human mind is not fully developed until 26. So if we can combine education, a component that everyone gets, and then focus however we can on advertisements, not glorify, you know, guns or hate or such things, is something that we could really focus on.
Thanks for the call, Neil. And we're going to obviously continue the conversation through the news here. One of the things that somebody suggested in the text line, and I, you know, as somebody who defends the Second Amendment, there's nothing in the Second Amendment that talks about age. And I know states like Florida, I believe, upped their age requirement for some weapons to, for some guns to 21. I mean, shotguns can be purchased when they're 18, but some of the other kinds of semi-automatic weapons, that goes up to 21. Nothing in the Second Amendment that says anything about age. Any state could do that right now. You could raise it to 25 if you wanted to. It might be a legal challenge, but, you know, take your chances. If you're serious, and to Neil's point about the developing mind of young people, and let's be honest, a lot of these crimes, although this individual was 28, are committed by very young adults. Nothing in the Second Amendment that prohibits setting that age at a slightly higher bar than it is now. Welcome your thoughts. Welcome your conversation. 855-616-1620.
We are working to find out the specifics on the situation, who these children were, their age, what exactly played out. Again, if you are just joining us, the worst news we have just found out, three children have died. They were killed in this situation. Again, it was an active shooter in a situation where the gunman was engaged by Metro Police. That shooter is confirmed dead, but now we have just learned three children are confirmed dead in this. My heart is just hurting right now. Thoughts and prayers for these families.
Two local broadcasters, Nashville, city of Nashville, dealing with the, that was their almost immediate response to that story as it broke. Six people dead. Private Christian school, shooter 28 years old. Motive still be determined. Apparently there was a manifesto, and at some point we'll probably know that, but that doesn't bring anybody back. So, you know, I've been talking with you, and you're welcome to join the show, 855-616-1620. And so much of the conversation about, well, what can we do? Those are the questions people ask me as somebody who dealt with a mass shooting from a leadership perspective, who has met the families of parents who lost kids shot and killed in a school environment, specifically Sandy Hook and a couple others, Columbine. And, you know, it's always not the easiest thing to talk about because on its face, it's so stunning. And then I hear politicians talk about it. And it becomes, well, you know the kind of the recipe, the response agenda is thoughts and prayers. We got to do something. Maybe some debates. Maybe some town halls. Maybe some legislation, usually which never goes anywhere. And then the next shooting happens. And the problem is, well, the problem is twofold. One, there's that inaction. Whatever that action might be, it might just be dollars spent on mental health, might be dollars spent, as I mentioned before, on school security and mental health, as, again, not a fan of Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, but he actually proposed that last year. Didn't see the light of day. But also in our collective reaction and response, which brings me to an individual that you don't know. He's the congressman for the district where that school shooting happened in Nashville. Now, let me say this just to preface it. You can do whatever you want. It's a free country for the most part. There are some restrictions, obviously. We're civilized, supposedly, although we slaughter kids in school. So I could make the counter argument in a debate and probably win. So in 2021, Representative Andy Ogles sends out a Christmas card. His wife, his three kids, all holding weapons, except for the youngest. I believe she's just holding a Christmas book or a Christmas card. Standing in front of their Christmas tree, which is very impressive, in their nice home. And I was thinking to myself, because this circulated a lot yesterday, and, you know, again, we have a rights, free speech, all of that. And I bet you Andy Ogles is probably regretting that decision in 2021, the Christmas time of 2021. But maybe not. I don't know him. But at the minimum, it's insensitive. And at its worst, I have to question somebody who would who links Christmas, the celebration of Christmas, to guns. Because those two things don't really have much to do with each other. Unless I'm missing something. But here we are, which gets me to the politician piece. Somebody asked me, Steve, well, why don't we ever see anything happen? Because we have idiots and knuckleheads representing us who all they do is thoughts and prayers. That's all they do. It's one thing to propose legislation. That's the easy part. That's the easy part. Real leadership, real hard work is when you get that legislation passed and you have a metric or metrics that you can then judge the value of that legislation. So at some point you either tweak it or you get rid of it because it didn't work. None of that happens. We're left with the shallowness and the nonsense of don't take my guns or ban all guns, as if that's the two choices, therefore we can't do anything. Price of freedom, as they say, price of freedom. Kids are going to die, people are going to die, gun violence in America, nothing we can do about it. Or, of course, the other popular stance of talking heads is, well, just ignore it. Happens. We'll talk about Joe Biden or Hunter Biden. We'll talk about Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels. And that's the extent of the conversation. The empty-headedness of politicians. 855-616-1620. You want to challenge me on it? I welcome those calls and texts. We are not being served. So as a texter asked me, what would you do? I would fortify schools. I'm sorry. I've asked for school resource officers. That should have happened. Every school should have somebody at least monitoring the entrances of the doors constantly as long as there's people in that building. Sorry. I would not have glass doors in a school. Sorry if that doesn't look aesthetically pleasing. I don't care. That's a minimum. All the money we pushed out of Washington, our money, all the money we're spending in school districts building brand new field houses and performing arts centers and new stadiums and new tracks. You couldn't find any money for security and all that? Interesting choices you made. But it shouldn't surprise you. School districts can't even solve the bullying question. How in the hell are they ever going to fix mass shootings in schools? And the answer is they're probably not going to unless somebody says this is what you have to do and they're forced to listen. Actions have consequences. The inaction also has consequences. You don't make our schools safe and secure, these are some of the things that will happen. Regardless of what our thoughts are about gun rights, or mental health, or sentencing. It's amazing to me that all the consternation, all the advertising dollars in race after race after race, talk about, we got to get tough on crime, except if it's a gun and it's a school, nothing we can do here. Because I measure by actual things accomplished. You're not accomplishing anything. So if you're an elected official serving at a congressional or certainly presidential level, this is on you. Sorry, it is. I don't want your thoughts and prayers. They're meaningless to me because you didn't do anything about it. You want a real exercise in understanding this? There are now books, there are presentations, certainly there are things all over the internet from the parents of people who have lost kids in schools. Go and find one and listen to it. And I can tell you it's a hard watch. I met people who were slaughtered in their place of worship, their parents and their members of their faith groups, slaughtered in a place of worship. You think that was an easy conversation? No. Just as it shouldn't happen in schools, it shouldn't happen in places of worship, but it does, because we've accepted that. We've decided, for whatever reason, we're just going to talk about it. Can't do anything. Second Amendment, can't do anything, sorry. What a lazy way to approach governments. You want to send out Christmas cards with guns? Do it. But I reserve the right to call you an idiot. Insensitive at the minimum, outright brain dead at its worst. And if your response to a school shooting or mass shooting or whatever it is to do stuff like that, you're part of the problem. Sorry, you are. Now, I understand this has been a speech, but sometimes you got to make a speech, right? We'll take a break. 855-616-1620. You want to get me worked up? This is an issue I will get worked up on. Because at the end of the day, kids were slaughtered in their classroom. They're 9 years old. There's a why question we should always be asking. Why in the hell, in a country as great as ours, would we ever allow that to happen? And certainly, why in the world will we let it happen over and over and over again, and all we ever do? Talking about the most recent mass shooting in America. Just this month, 57 people died in 38 mass shootings in the United States. This year, I don't even think there's 130 days of this year so far, but there's been 130 mass shootings that have taken place in 2023. Save the text. The qualifier is 4 people killed minus the shooter. That's the definition. Oh, and by the way, if you hear, read, because trust me, this happens every time. I live in Wisconsin. I'm aware of this, and people often point it out to me. Some organization will print a op-ed from some talking, squawking head. They'll say, we don't have a mass shooting problem in this country. It's all the media. No. If one kid gets slaughtered in a classroom, that's a mass shooting problem, in my definition. That's all I need is that definition. So stop with that. If you hear a squawking head saying that, those words, on a show, call the station manager and say, you have an idiot on the air who's not really talking reality, but is spitting some weird yarn about there's no mass shooting problems in this country. And then stop listening to that station, because that's stupid and dumb. Sam joins us from McHenry. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, how you doing today, Steve?
I'm fired up, Sam.
Well, you're saying it. Yeah, I know you are. Well, you're saying everybody's talking, but actually that's why I disagree with you. Nobody is talking about this one, because this was a mental health situation that morphed its way into a hate crime. And it was carried out by someone who has had a lot of politicians using this as a political movement in this country, this whole transgenderism thing. And now it morphed its way, like I said, into a hate crime. You got 6 people dead, 3 of them were kids, and nobody's talking about it.
I'm talking about it, Sam. I mentioned the show talking about mental health.
You are. But yeah, no, what are we doing about it? See, we got a president that comes out, wants to talk about MAGA. He wants to talk about white supremacy. He wants to talk about all that garbage. But this is the real thing now that we have been talking about, mental health, hate crimes. In fact, the hate crimes go back to Bill Clinton. So now what are we going to do about it? We got one right here in our hands. They don't want to touch it because it's been part of a political movement. So this one will get shoved to the side.
I hope you're wrong, Sam. And I trust me, I understand the mental health piece. I read something before from a senator I don't even like, Ted Cruz, who spends far too much time in the media than doing his damn job. But he proposed last year billions of dollars for mental health. It didn't even get a listen. Didn't get a hearing. But it's Ted Cruz saying it. And I can find countless examples from Democrats who've said, we should do something. Here's some real measures on mental health, on gun violence. And nothing happens. Dave from Winneconne, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
One of the things that's a contributing factor to this, in my opinion, is some of the stuff that you have on social media and the internet.
Yeah.
I was on one day, and I can't tell you the guy's name or what it is, but he had 2 tables full of different firearms, from AR-15s to 6-shooters. and he's shooting up all kind of stuff, and how neat this is. And, you know, you got kids that are in junior high or whatever watching this stuff. You know, it's a gun culture. And you know, you want to say parents gotta watch what their kids are doing on there. But that's hard to do 24 hours a day because parents are working. You know?
Absolutely. It's never been harder to be a parent, Dave. I hear you.
And they're alone for an hour or so.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, you can't limit it because everybody screams and hollers about the First Amendment. But we got to make some decisions about how that stuff can be blocked out, or some of these people can be held responsible when something happens for what they're putting on there.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Dave. Dave calling from Winnick County. Look, none of this is easy. If you think this is an easy answer, you're wrong. Mental health, restrictions on people who shouldn't have guns. And let's be brutally honest, gun owners and gun rights advocates, we've made it easier for bad guys to get guns under the guise of, we're Second Amendment, no restrictions. When everybody knows with the brain that's functioning, there are already restrictions. You just don't acknowledge them because it doesn't work to your arguments. One last time. If you hear someone making an argument today, tomorrow, next week, that we don't have a mass shooting problem in this country, do something about it. That argument makes no sense. Three children, three adults slaughtered yesterday. That's not even close to the number that have been slaughtered in classrooms in this country for the last 30 years. Whether it's mental health, gun issues, social media, video games, I don't care what the reason is. The ask that I have is we have to commit funds to find out why people are doing this. We have to restrict in areas where it doesn't make sense for people to have access to these kinds of weapons in a school situation. And we have to fortify schools. I said this many years ago when Mike Goucher had me on his program, that short-term response has to be school security. Has to be. That's just the
breaking
first
down
step.
The but biggest stories, talking point. About what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to the Tuesday show. I am Steve, as Big Voice Guy just said. I got a ton of texts in the first hour. We are going to change topics. But thank you for all the texts. I couldn't possibly read them all. I mean, I'm talking about 500 in that course of that hour. And somebody asked me, like, in one of the last few texts that I read, so what are you saying? What should we do? Challenge your leaders, clearly. Don't let them get away with thoughts and prayers. That's lazy. I don't care about their thoughts and prayers. It's nice they're doing that. Okay, fine. Okay, what else? And you can have a strong opinion about gun rights, which many people do in this country. Not all Republicans, by the way. That should be made clear. It's not just a one side or the other. There's a lean, absolutely, but it's not absolute. But ask them, what should we be doing? Because on its face, if it's just going to be about a gun issue, we're never going to get to a resolution or at least a slowing down of the incidence of mass shootings. I mentioned it. It was mentioned in the news. We shouldn't have 130 mass shootings in this country. That's insane. And we should never have kids slaughtered in their classrooms. Sorry. That's a non-starter. There's no acceptable number for that. There's no number that works. Zero is the right number. So facing that reality, with your local leader, your congressman, congresswoman, senator, ask them what's after thoughts and prayers. That's the question. See what you get. All right, completely shifting gears, but I thought since we're going to have a big race here decided hopefully next Tuesday night for Supreme Court in Wisconsin, a bunch of people were sending me messages over the last week or so. And it's a faith/church/politics question. And I want to get your opinion on this. 855-616-1620. I'll give you the gist of it. I'm not going to out a church because we need more faith, not less faith. But many local faith leaders have been either talking about this issue or actually printing something up and handing it to their parishioners or their members of their congregations. And it has to do with the race for Supreme Court. Next Tuesday, of course, is the last day, final day, voting day. People have been pre-voting for a while. We've had mail-in, all of that. And the point of view is interesting from some faith leaders, and this is where I want to get your thoughts on it. Openly advising their members to not vote for, and I'm paraphrasing, the woman in the race on the issue of abortion, for the issue of abortion. Particularly Catholics, several different churches. I'm going to read briefly from one. You cannot publicly support abortion or abortion advocates and remain a Catholic in good standing. I would, as a Catholic, I would suggest that if you don't think there's people in your church who have a different opinion on abortion and still think they're good Catholics, you are completely out of touch. But I understand that the church's position. From the piece that someone sent to me, the fact that this is a Supreme Court race does not exempt us from our duty to protect life. This moment requires our duty. It's a mortal sin to render aid to the cause of abortion. That aid includes voting. As a Catholic, I urge you for the salvation of your soul. Do not vote for her in the Supreme Court race on April 4th. Now, the two examples that were sent to me with slightly different language, don't mention the candidate's name. Don't support the other candidate in the message. So they're playing the game of, well, we didn't say you had to vote for him. Simple question. As a Catholic, the one I just read was part of a handout in a Catholic church. And many of the other ones I read were similar. This is happening all over the place, by the way. Is that appropriate? Should your... And I can... I understand the position on abortion. Pretty clear. Not in debates. But taking an advocacy role in a race for a position, by the way, that's not the only decider. That's not the only thing that the Supreme Court of Wisconsin is going to rule on at some point or another. And I will remind people, whatever the Supreme Court of Wisconsin does, the U.S. Supreme Court might get that case back in some form or fashion, and they may have the ultimate decision. 855-616-1620. Would you welcome this as a person of faith, or would you say, you know what, I'm good, I'll handle my own voting? You can say it in a message, but like a handout or, you know, playing the politics game in church when you and I both know that, like a lot of things, positions of a particular faith, it's not a universal situation. Most people take the best of their faith and disregard the rest. Let's be honest. And I know that drives some people nuts, but that's the reality, folks. It's a reality on abortion. It's a reality on a lot of things that churches do. And I will remind you that one of the things I've said fairly often recently is, too many people practice their faith while they're in church. Immediately outside, they go right into the politics, I hate the other side mode, as if that's an acceptable form of faith. Trust me, it's not. I don't care what faith you are. There's certainly right or wrong. But when a faith leader gets involved in an actual election with handouts or pronouncements advising against one candidate, suggestively, using the term her when there's only one woman in the race, does that go too far? 855-616-1620, that is the old National Bank talk and text line. What do you think after this? So a lot of people are making this point on the old National Bank talk and text line. So I looked it up, irs.gov. Tax exempt status for churches, page 7. Political campaign activities. Certain activities or expenditures may not be prohibited, depending on the facts and circumstances. But under this code, Churches and religious organizations are absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in or intervening in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elective public office. So that's where the name's being left out. That's the game that's being played by some Catholic churches in our area and perhaps where you live. Chuck from Manitowoc joins the conversation. Hey, Chuck, welcome to WTMJ. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. What do you think?
I think it's both that churches are getting involved in politics. My personal belief is that there should be no religion in politics whatsoever. You get into the fact that, or into the point that, which religion are they going to support? We've got how many different religions in this country, and if you support one over the other, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's hard to explain.
There's no clear line, Chuck, and thanks for the call. Look, I could flip it. I know the race. I've had both the candidates on at least two times. I think Dan Kelly has been on three times. Couldn't a church leader argue that a constitutionalist position on the Second Amendment leads to more gun violence, the loss of life? Couldn't you make that argument if you wanted to? See, that's where it gets messy. And depending on who sent me this excerpt from a local Catholic church, or two churches actually, one might discern that they're playing a interesting little game here, thinking that no one's going to challenge them on this, and perhaps someone will and perhaps someone won't. But if you're going to walk around with tax-exempt status as a religious organization, there are rules. Or are we advocating there should be no rules because your person must win this race? I'll get to another example of that a little bit later this hour. The absolute idiocy of a statement by a candidate for office in Wisconsin, who frankly should know better. But to the point, on this one, I don't want to see that. I have a strong opinion about abortion, as rare as possible. I don't know that it's going to be criminalized ever and have an equitable system of justice in this country, because I just don't see that happening. Should it be rare? In my opinion, yes. But I don't get to decide for everybody else. And when a religious or faith leader actually goes to advocating in a rather clever way, without using the names, when you know there's a man and a woman in the race, him and her, and you called out the woman on this issue when ignoring a lot of other issues for the male candidate that perhaps could be also looked at in this religious perspective, it seems like you're advocating in politics, which by my read of the IRS document on tax-exempt status for churches and religious organizations, might be a little trouble there. Megan joins us from Grafton.
Hi.
Hi, Megan.
I've been listening all along, and I absolutely agree with you on this, where the separation of church and state goes both ways. If the government shouldn't be making decisions on what church institutions do and what people have to believe or what doctrine to follow, and religious institutions should not be influencing their members and parishioners on what's happening in the political realm, because then, just like you had just said, their tax-exempt status should be taken into question. If you're going to be exempt from paying taxes, then you need to stay out of the conversation and let people decide for themselves.
Well, that's exactly right. Thanks for the call, Megan. Megan has common sense. There's rules. And I know that some people are advocating for just ignoring the rules you don't like, ignoring the laws you don't like, on both sides, constantly. This one I'm pretty steadfast on. I'm a Catholic, so I feel like I'm at least part of the conversation, right? Since the two things that were sent to me were from Catholic churches. So I feel like I have a role here, role to play. I have a radio show. And it was kind of a clever, gimmicky way to play around with politics from the pulpits. I don't like it. I think it's disingenuous, and I would call into question a faith leader who did this. Matter of fact, if I was sitting in that church, I might walk out if it was said out loud versus a handout. 414 from the Old National Bank talking text line. No politics from the pulpit. Yes, sent from a Christian. Pat from New Berlin. How is this different than our priest getting up on the pulpit and slamming Scott Walker by name when he was running for county executive? It's not. Same thing. Not appropriate. Or when the priest pushes their liberal politics on us from the pulpit. Also not appropriate. There are lessons to be learned from faith. I've talked about this many times. I played on purpose two clips from local broadcasters in Mississippi yesterday and Nashville, Tennessee today that used faith in their actual broadcast. So it's not an argument about faith. It's about the rules associated with that faith and the power of that position as a faith leader. Linda, I believe what faith leaders should be doing is guiding their parishioners toward what God says, not what they think. I do not agree with him handing out pamphlets towards one candidate or the other. When it comes to abortions, I see it as wrong, according to, she says Scott. I'm not sure why she put Scott there. 715. I understand not endorsing a candidate, but to deny that abortion is the bedrock of your faith is just plain wrong. I'm not asking to deny that. As a matter of fact, this statement, both statements that I looked at, could have left it at that. There was a direct acknowledgement of the woman in the race, which was advocating. I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more attention, because it is a direct violation, as far as I can see it, from the IRS document on tax-exempt status for religious organizations. Direct. 847. There's been talk of removing tax-exempt status for churches who participate in election recommendations here in Illinois. Interesting. My Catholic church refused to bless a woman on Mother's Day, but blessed the dads on Father's Day. I'm not sure how that relates, but plus, how could priests be experts on women's reproductive health? That's the thing that people don't understand. I know that some people think the rules of your faith are absolute. And you can nod your head in agreement and say, yes, that's what we all believe. But anybody who lives in a real world knows that everybody in that church is a sinner, or any place of worship. We are sinners. We violate the rules all the time, folks. We are not perfect. We're not robots. Although in 100 years in the future, we may be. As clever as this faith leader was trying to be, by skirting the rules, sort of, we have to get away from that. Because there's not much separation between that and a faith leader going up in the front of their members of their congregation or temple, synagogue, and openly advocating for candidates. And that is a direct violation that should not happen. And if that does happen, you should lose your tax-exempt status. Sorry, that's the reality. It might make you feel good if they're saying something you agree with, but what happens next time when they say something you don't? That's the problem. Quick break. Thanks for all the texts on this. I tried to answer as many as I could during the break. I mean, we have so much time, only a few minutes, but a lot of great thoughts. I'm going to shift a little bit on some of the things that we're talking about today. And this kind of goes back to the school shooting thing, because it goes to a famous case in Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, where a individual went in and shot up a school. The parents now are charged with manslaughter. I thought it was a nice tie-in to what we talked about earlier. And maybe, just might be, the where this storyline, this narrative is going next. The accountability of those folks who provide guns to mass shooters. When you know something's not right, is that the next chapter of this story? So we'll get to that after the break. Love my Badger fence. You will too. All right. This is kind of coming back to an earlier topic. We spent the 9 o'clock hour talking about the absurdity of debate in this country and how silly it is. Actually, that's not the right term. How harmful it is that we can't have a serious conversation about gun violence. So I saw this story. I was going to do it yesterday, and then Carol and I never got to it. And just preface it again, we've had 38 U.S. mass shootings in March. 57 killed, 133 injured. And for the year, 130 mass shootings have taken place, defined by four or more people killed, shooter not included. And as I said earlier, if you read or hear anyone who says we don't have a mass shooting problem in this country, talk to the manager, whatever that is, station manager, newspaper, talk to him right away. That's foolishness, silliness. Again, probably shouldn't use the term silly when we're talking about gun violence. It's erroneous, and you should immediately not listen to that point of view. And there's, trust me, there will be op-eds, there will be hit pieces on anyone who dare challenges the mindset of absolute Second Amendment as if there's no rules already. And as I said over and over again, there already are rules. Speaking of that, I saw this story over the weekend, and I, as I said, I wanted to get to it yesterday, but didn't get to it. Here's the headline. And I think a lot of you remember this case. Oxford High School, Michigan. I think it was it last year or the 2021, November 30th, 2021, Oxford High School. Here's the headline. Parents of Michigan high school shooter Ethan Crumbly will go to trial, judges rule. Four students were killed in this attack. The parents, now charged, will stand trial for their alleged role in the attack. Three-judge panel with the Michigan Court of Appeals has ruled Jennifer and James Crumbly have pleaded not guilty to four counts of involuntary manslaughter in connection with the mass shooting. Their son, Ethan, was 15 at the time, allegedly used his father's semi-automatic handgun to kill four students, injuring others. The parents are accused of making the gun accessible and failing to recognize warning signs. They were, according to the judge, actively involved in not acknowledging their son's mental health issues. They provided him, this is a direct quote from the judge, provided him with a weapon to use to kill the victims. Another direct quote, refused to remove him from the situation that led directly to the shootings. One of the judges said. Now, one of the other judges wrote that although parents typically cannot be held liable for a child's crime, Jennifer and James Crumbly were aware of visual evidence that their son was contemplating the act of gunshot wounds because he drew a picture of it in school. He actively, their son, researched ammunition in class. School contacted the parents. They didn't respond. 855-616-1620. I wholeheartedly agree with this. I hope that not only, I'm happy they're charged, I hope they're convicted and go to prison. Now, you may think that's harsh. But if we're going to be serious about mass shootings, and again, going back to our early conversation, because so many of you were texting me about this. This goes to the what can we do question. If you knowingly ignore the warning signs, if you knowingly provide a firearm, gun, weapon to a child who has exhibited these warning signs and who has acknowledged to you in person that he wants to go kill people at school, I have zero problem with you going to jail with him. Zero. And I'll go even farther than that. And this is where it gets tricky or slippery. If you sell a gun to a known felon, it's not going to be a penalty of dollars. If you sell a gun to a known felon who commits an act of violence, you go to prison too. And I know that's going to make some people happy. I can't be responsible for what they do. If you know, again, there's some questions there. No, not no. I get it. But if it can be proven that you know, you go to jail too. So to the answer to that, what can we do question, here's another one. Consequences for bad behavior. One of the mantras of the Second Amendment folks is keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys. When wink, wink, nod, nod. Every day in this country, there's plenty of good guys with guns, handing over guns, selling guns to bad guys with guns every damn day. And you know what? You want to gauge that behavior? Penalty for you. And I know that's strong, and I know some people aren't going to like it. Tough. You want answers to this stuff? You're going to get answers. You're not going to like them? Tough. And in the case of the parents of Ethan Crumbly, shame on you. I hope you get convicted and hope you rot in jail. That's the reality. 855-616-1620. That's a what can we do answer for you right here in WTMJ. I mentioned earlier in the show when we were talking about mass shootings, the idiocy of politicians and elected officials. Some, not all. So I saw this story yesterday. It got some national press. It was written by Molly Beck of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our local newspaper here in Milwaukee. And it's, I think, a glaring example of that. Now, keep in mind that the individual that I'm going to mention here is not even elected to this position. He's a Republican state senate candidate. His name is Dan Knodel. His election, if he's successful, would mean that the state senate would have a Republican supermajority. Republicans don't have a supermajority in the assembly, so it's largely symbolic. But one of the interesting things that I would call it embarrassing that Dan Knodel said was this. He would consider impeaching Jana Protasiewicz if he's elected to the Senate. So this is a candidate projecting out to winning the race, which he hasn't won yet. He's running against Jody Habesh-Sinkin of Whitefish Bay. Dan Knodel's from Germantown. In this special election for the 8th Senate District. So hasn't won the race yet. He may win. But he's already looking ahead to this power that apparently the Wisconsin Constitution allows lawmakers to remove state officials for corrupt conduct in office or for crimes and misdemeanors. A judgment by the not even elected candidates if, and this is still a big if, Jana Protasiewicz defeats Dan Kelly. And that's not a given. Trust me. And I'll have a prediction on that race on Friday. So when I hear stuff like this, the hubris, the ego, just the nonsensical approach to doing your job, as if someone wins a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court, and one of the first things you're talking about is that if that person wins, well, we're going to seriously consider removing them from their job. This is also a guy that, for the most part, endorsed the whole election steal nonsense. So take it for what it's worth. I want to bring in a caller here that has some comments to make on the Michigan shooting. So I want to bring in Rick calling from Waukesha. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I guess the only thing that, you know, I would say, and I agree with you 100% in referencing, you know, responsible gun ownership and the parents taking that responsibility. Again, it was one of the individuals killed in that situation was a coworker. Of mine, their son. And there were so many signals ahead of time. I mean, not just the day of, but months before that really haven't come out that, you know, I think responsibility does still come in with the school administration as well.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's, they may be hamstrung by law. I don't know the legal side of it, but, you know, when they had him in there that morning, why they didn't bring in the school resource officer on that particular day, who would probably have had the authority to search his locker, search his backpack, or force them to leave the building.
Yeah, I've heard that account before on a national news show, and it is befuddling because it seems like that would be a nice intervention there to maybe slow this person down. Maybe have a different result if you get the people who are on the ground in the school involved right away?
Absolutely. And, you know, the parents were trying, they purchased the gun as a gift, trying to, you know, blend or bond with their son closer, you know, beforehand. So, you know, I don't know if that's the right reason to, you know, I know it's not the right reason to hand somebody a firearm.
Yeah.
But
knowing the situation, I think there's probably tons of parents. I know a bunch who purchase firearms for their young adults or their children, but they do it in a supervised fashion. They do it at a range. They do it on a hunting trip where the adult is there. This is not handing a gun over to a kid who has mental health issues.
And that had the signals.
Yes.
Months in advance. So it's a bad situation. I mean, as you mentioned, it affects multiple people, multiple families, multiple lives. But there should be some accountability. And I'm a pro Second Amendment, but I agree with, you know, the thing is responsible ownership.
Yeah, I think most
comes with that.
Yeah, I think thanks for the call, Rick. And I know it's not easy to call a radio show, and especially when you're kind of connected to the story. Look, the gun owners that I know are responsible. We know that not everybody's responsible. And this devolves often into conversations about sentencing and all that stuff, which are smart conversations to have. But it also involves responsible gun owners doing responsible things. It involves responsible parents making the right call. These parents didn't make the right call. They should be punished because lives are lost. Maybe that results in better parenting by the rest of us. I hope so. But all this conversation about consequences for bad behavior, sometimes the actions aren't direct. They're outside of the person who pulls the trigger, but they still have tremendous impact on the net result, which is lives lost, in this case, in schools. You ask me, what can we do? This is one more thing we can do. And I want to thank Rick for taking the time to make that call connected to that story by a friend who lost their child in that shooting. We'll take a break here. Lots more to get to. We'll do it after this on WTMJ. I've had a show poll up on Twitter at 620WTMJ. Also find it at WTMJ. Steve, my page, give me a follow if you could. Has to do with our topic of earlier in the program. A heavily armed shooter killed 3 children and 3 adults at a private Christian school in Nashville yesterday. What is your immediate reaction to the story? So I asked the question, and I gave you 3 possible answers. The first one is interesting. It's not the leading vote-getter, but actually it's last. Thoughts and prayers. Who would have ever thought, thinking about how often this happens now, that thoughts and prayers would have a negative connotation? Think about that for a second. Innocent comments that has been cliched and is now looked upon as a slap in the face to victims and their families. Think about that for a second. That speaks to the mass shootings we've seen take place in this country and the reaction or lack of reaction from our elected leaders. To that point, the next choice was our leaders are clueless, 34%. Thoughts and prayers got 18%. Lots of guns, no surprise, 40%. With 25 comments, which are all over the board, as you would expect. Already 321 votes. I haven't even mentioned it until now. So great job, you. You can find it on Twitter at 620WTMJ or at WTMJ Steve. And if you don't have the twits, you can certainly answer that question with one of these 3 answers. Thoughts and prayers. Our leaders are clueless. Lots of guns, no surprise. On the old National Bank talk and text line, 855-616-1620. And I look forward to reading those responses. All right, which sets up nicely for our 11 o'clock hour conversation, as I quickly pull it up. So there's been a flood of surveys and polling to kind of figure out what Americans are thinking, right? I've talked about some of the political ones. Well, there's an interesting one. I read about it in the New York Post, but it's all over the place. Wall Street Journal. It's a new survey in the Wall Street Journal, NORC, asking about values in our country. Things like patriotism, religion and faith, community involvement, the importance of money in your daily life. And I'll set it up this way, and then we're going to go to the top of the hour news, and we'll dig in all in after the top of the hour. And you can join us, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank, talking text line. Here's the headline. Traditional values like patriotism, religion, and community have plunged dramatically among Americans. I'll just give you one example before the break. Patriotism. They asked that question, same survey, in 1998, which is 25 years ago. Is patriotism very important to you? The answer in 1998, 70% said yes. You know what it is now? 38%. That on its face is illustrative of what we've been talking about. And that's just the beginning. We'll dig deep on this one because I think it says a lot about some of the major things we cover every day on this show and on this station. The values of a country trend down, not up. That's the danger. And that is very illustrative of why we talk about these things too often, especially when you're talking about violent crime, gun violence, and the like. Break for news.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. The 11 o'clock hour on this Tuesday edition. Broadcasting live from the Avenue Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Hope it's nice where you are. Thanks for all the long-distance listens. I love hearing from people around the country because, I mean, we always, wherever we're at, whether you're broadcasting from here or San Francisco or L.A. or Chicago, whatever it is, or listening in those places, I try to match my topics with stories that have both local significance and a national context as well. And I think if you listen long enough, you'll realize that. And it, you know, might be a little bit of a longer listen sometimes, but we get to a couple things. One, trying to find common ground on many of these big issues, which I think is important. And two, moving past talking heads. I do have interviews. I have less than I used to have, but I'm more interested in the action, the actual work being done. And I will call out on both sides of the aisle nonsense. I don't care how I vote. I don't care how you vote. What I do care about is stupidity and idiocy from people that we elect in very important roles, whether we're talking about mass shootings or the economy or border policy or the lack of border policy, which we've had in this country for many decades. I'm blaming both sides on that one. But this topic is more of a realization. And I had this is a takeaway from a conversation I had offline last night with a friend, old friend, on the subtext of mass shootings and why they're happening. And he did, like a lot of people, pointed to mental health, lack of faith, and bad parenting. And I'm not disagreeing at all with my friend Tom, because he's right. Those are real things. And I saw this survey the other day over the weekend, and I said, we got to talk about this, because I think it is illustrative of what some of that subtext is when it comes to the major problems in this country. New survey, Wall Street Journal, NORC, on values. Long-held values, things like patriotism, religion, community involvement, money. I'm just going to give you some of the headlines here. And these are surveys done in 1998 and 2023, probably 2022. Released in 2023. First one, patriotism. Very important. How would you rate that? In 1998, 70% of the respondents said very important. The most recent survey, 38%. What about faith, you might ask? 25 years ago, 62% said faith was very important. Right now, 39%. How about raising children, having a family? There's that family unit, power of parents, role of mentors to their kids, helping them learn from their mistakes, make the right decisions, not act out in violence. Go back 25 years. Parenting, very important, the question, 59%. You know what it was now? 30%. Here's another one, the fabric of the community. Anyone who's lived in a smaller community, or large, a great neighborhood in a large community, understands that connective, the connective tissue of working together to solve problems, whether that's a garbage issue, whether that's landscaping, getting the right businesses, pushing away against businesses that are harmful to your neighborhood or your community. Community involvement, 62%, as recently as 2019, by the way. Current rating, 27%. So I guess the point of this is one measure of many measures looking at the role of values, commonly held values amongst all of us, and why we've seen an erosion of decorum, an erosion of civility, an increase in bad behavior, a rise in mass shootings and gun violence, reckless driving, drug use, and the like. 855-616-1620. I guess the big overarching question is, why do you think that is? I think I trust the ratings. They're essentially cut in half from what they were 25 years ago on important things like faith. You know, the only one that went up, the importance of money. Does that speak to a selfish generation or two? Yeah, it does. Bottom line, not money for raising family, I need money, but money to spend, to buy. And that's an interesting development because it's only one that's gone up. 855-616-1620. The old National Bank talking text line. What's the reason for this? I've given you the values, but what's the overarching reason why these things have declined? And why, in my opinion, and probably yours as well, we are suffering as a result with no ownership of problems, no investment in community or community involvement, and a mistreatment and our complete dislike of anyone that disagrees with us politically or looks different. We'll do that after this on WTMJ. Join the conversation, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Did I read that too fast? 855-616-1620. I'm going to have a tribute to a local veteran who passed away in sometime this hour. A friend of mine, but somebody who, boy, lived a life. 94 years old when he passed. We'll get to that a little bit later this hour. Jack joins us on the phone from Caledonia. Hey, welcome to the show, Jack.
Steve, how are you doing? A couple things. One is when you look at the role models that we saw on TV growing up, it was Leave It to Beaver. The parents were very, very professional. You had My Three Sons. You can list the other ones, and they were all respected parents, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as our kids were growing up, they were watching Simpsons, they were watching Al Bundy, they were watching, parents being buffoons.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And I think it was a whole different thing. The other thing I think people, if you have that question, ask them, what do you feel about your cell phone? I think most people say, I'll go to battle for my cell phone. I'll go to war for my cell phone,
Yeah, I think you're
spending too much time on it.
Yes.
You're not spending time talking to the person next to you.
Absolutely. If I had a bell, I'd ring it right now, Jack. Thanks for the call, Jack. That is exactly right. The rise of social media has contributed to the fall of values. It's not the only thing. Obviously, patriotism tied to politics, or I should say to one party, your party, right? That's part of it. Certainly the selfishness of individuals, the me, which is why the money value thing went up. But Jack is right. We call this thing a smartphone. It makes us dumber. We attach it to ourselves like it's tethered when it's not. Never leaving our side, never leaving our bed or bedroom. A constant barrage of negativity. Lack of common sense and logic in many of the opinions expressed on said device. Why would we think that wouldn't have influence? I'll go even further. The rise of reality TV, highlighting the stupid for our entertainment. The misfits, including in some cases rich families who, for some reason, money's not helping their problems. They're just as dumb as a box of rocks. From the old National Bank talking text line, 847 area code. Do you think politicians might get more honest if they weren't allowed to put pork in bills? Yeah, sure. That's actually one of the things the House did early on in their current session. They allowed amendments. But I will point to the reality for those folks in the House, conservatives, is that those bills that keep passing aren't becoming actual law. They're just sitting there in the House. These are feel-good bills, feel-good legislation. They're advocating for positions they want to be able to run on in the next race, which is, as you've heard me say, is one of their two main functions, winning elections and raising campaign dollars. Unfortunately, that's the reality. Steve, from the 920, these problems are evident in the number of people who record an incident rather than step in and help the person. Yeah, lack of initiative. Fear of what? Getting sued? Fear of losing your life? Well, that's part of it. The rise of violent crime means someone will be less likely to jump into a situation when you know there might be a gun involved. That's probably common sense, I would think. Let's see, 920, 20 years, wars were not paid for. Trillions in debt, faith leaders exposed in frauds, rich and connected, gaming the system economically and legally. This generation wasn't fed propaganda on three channels. Now we got hundreds of channels feeding propaganda. From the 414, don't forget about all the video games who shoot 'em up, kill themes, wrecking our society. I haven't mentioned video games today because often a conversation about violence devolves into a conversation about video games. Do I think it plays a role? Sure. When you're raising children and young adults and older adults, let's be honest. If I see one more person my age say they're a great gamer, I'm going to throw up. That's your skill? Happy for you. Denny joins us from Augsburg. Hey, Denny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve, I think there's lots of buckets in this, as you alluded to, but one we need to talk about is after World War II to about 1970, all the financial buckets rose together, all the levels, all floated all the boats.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, for a lot of reasons, and particularly in the early 80s with the gutting of antitrust laws and the selling to our country that business is everything, and I own two businesses. So understand that with 50-some employees.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom 60% of this country have lost ground since 1970, and some of them horrifically. And right now I have friends in that group, and they're feeling like their only voice is to rant on social media, which where they should not be, but I understand why they do it. And we have to simply figure out a way to not crush the lowest among us. And you've heard it a million times. Warren Buffett said it. My secretary pays more, higher percentage of taxes than I do.
Yeah.
That's one of the major things right there.
Yeah, great points, Denny, calling from Augsburg. Yes, exactly right. We've seen the explosion of CEO pay. And Denny's a business owner, and he's telling you that, folks. The destruction of the middle class, hammered with taxes, absorbing the burden of 50% of the population paying no income tax. And I want to pick on poor people, but you know what? Everybody should be vested. Whether it's $25, $100, $1,000, or $1,000,000, everybody should be vested. And if you have a ever smaller group of people and an ever richer slice of the pie getting so much compensation, so much reward for being the allegedly smartest among us, best and brightest, it creates a system of inequity and unfairness. That's not shocking. And when you destroy the middle class and those making substandard wages for jobs, what do you think's going to happen? We are going to erode the values of a country that a lot of us are still really proud of. These are all important factors, and I'm glad that the callers are nailing these things because, boy, this is, again, like gun violence, this is a complex issue. I wish I could flip a switch and change the direction of these trends, but I can't do that, and I don't think we can do that. Now, there's a lot of younger people who say, oh, things are just fine. It's just different. But I'm saying, as an older American, this different seems different to me. It doesn't seem healthy. And I say that knowing that reflections, surveys, polling on mental health suggest I'm right and you're not right. The me has replaced the we. This is a country that excels on community, excels on leadership. And all of those systems, all of those values are failing us every day. Got a lot of texts on this. You're welcome to weigh in as well. 855-616-1620. We'll take another break. We'll be back with the bottom of the hour news after this. Declining values, patriotism, faith, all part of the problem when it comes to how we conduct ourselves and how we manage our lives in this great country that we call the United States. Earl joins us from the Northwest side. Welcome as always, Earl.
Hey, good morning. You know, I, like you, have grown weary of people who constantly talk about my individual rights. Me, I. Somebody's trampling on my rights. And never thinking about the masses of the citizenry, and your individual rights should never supersede the rights of the masses of the people. But we live in a society where it's all about me. You know, somebody's interfering with my rights and what exactly. I want, as if you somehow live on the planet alone.
And I always like to
that
say, Earl,
always the case.
I always like to say, Earl, with rights come responsibilities. You can't have one without the other, and they're both important.
Yeah, but we're at a point in the society where this has gotten to be a huge problem, and it has to be talked about, and it has to be corrected, and people have to be called out and make it clear that, hey, you, like all the rest of us, we're going to die. You don't own it. You don't control it, and it's what's in the best interest of all of us.
Earl, where do you think that correction starts? Like, where do we make those first upticks in those trends that we talked about?
Well, you know, I think right here on these airways, because the airways, I think, have had something to do with why people feel the other way they feel.
I think you're 100% right on that, Earl.
Conversations.
I think you're 100% right on that. We've polluted the conversation.
All right.
Thank you for the call, Earl. I think he's right. He's 100% right. We polluted the conversation. We treated it as a spectator sport. Politics, to be specific. We wasted a lot of good time and energy on nonsense. Does it sell? Sure. But I will speak out against it every chance I get because it's ended civil discourse for the most part. It's ruined more lives than we probably know, relationships. And it's eliminated the desire for some of us to actually fix things. People like Earl, who I think last time I talked to him was talking about some of the mentoring he does. That's real work. Not the empty-headed nonsense of politicians saying that I'm going to impeach somebody if I win office because I don't like them. That's not real. That's stupid and fake. Don't be that person. Fantastic Bruce Springsteen, of course. I just want to take a few minutes. One of my older friends passed away last week, and his name was John Repon. And he was a guy, well, first off, Army veteran, Korean War. Listen to this. He was a master carpenter, worked for Milwaukee County. He built amazing things. I have a pretty strong, strict attention to detail. John was that times 10, a perfectionist. And I saw firsthand some of the stuff he worked on. He's taking a raw piece of basically a tree, milling it down, making exquisite cabinets out of it. He He did this for Milwaukee County for many, many years as a master carpenter, and I saw some of his work firsthand. Because he used to be our cook later on in life. He was our cook for deer camp for probably about 15, maybe 20 years. He didn't hunt. He just came up and cooked for us. I mean, I'm talking about gourmet meals. Because, again, he had the attention to detail. And he also, one of his other, a couple of his great things he loved to do, he was a Boy Scout leader, very active in his church, but he was also a big model railroad guy. Like, whenever they did the big stuff here in Milwaukee, he was that guy. The big layouts and all that, he was in love with that. And I bring it up because, one, he's a veteran, and two, he passed away at the age of 94 and had a great life, great family. My dad remembers him from, you know, rabbit and pheasant hunting and near Monroe, fishing at Pewaukee Lake, which a lot of us did. He crafted an amazing house up in the Stevens Point area that we still get to hunt at. And nearly everything in that house, I was going to say cabin, but it's not a cabin, it's a house, trust me, had his touch on it. Why does this matter? Because we were just talking about values. And the principles of work and hard work and faith and the ethic of just being a good citizen. Well, John was that. Tremendous human being. And I didn't even always agree with him on stuff because we would talk, you know, deer camp, you have a lot of time to talk. And we didn't always agree on stuff, but that's the great thing about discourse, right? Having a conversation with something you disagree with is actually more exciting sometimes and more interesting than saying everyone nodding their head say, you are absolutely right. That's a great, great point. That's kind of boring. But you think about a life like that. His wife, Dorothy's still alive. And serving in Korea, which could not have been easy. And I have a friend, of course, who's been on the show during those times of year when we talk more about veterans, who was served during Korean War, Frozen Chosen, lost his father during that war, had to go come back. And that willingness to put yourself out there, to sacrifice, to go through all of that, the extremes of what it takes to be a member of the military, all the things it does to you, both psychologically and physically, mentally. Oh, yeah, then by the way, he was a master carpenter on top of that when he came back. That's pretty cool. So just remembering a veteran today, passed away last week, 94 years old, John Rapon, South Milwaukee resident, proud South Milwaukee resident, great guy, cooked a hell of a turkey, I tell you that. He used to feed our deer camp when it was 20 strong, 20 plus, and would cook up a, I think the wives used to get mad because we'd have this fantastic feast on opening weekend, Saturday nights. Fantastic, essentially, Thanksgiving feast of stuffing and turkey and potatoes and all the fixings and all that stuff. And then by the time we got home for Thanksgiving, we were like, oh, that's boring, because he did it so well. So I'm remembering John Rapon today, one of our great veterans, Korean War veteran, 94 years old, from South Milwaukee. We'll miss him, but we'll miss people like that. That's that work ethic, that, God, that commitment to excellence that he had. I am not kidding. Taking a piece of wood and making something out of it, and the quality of his workmanship as a master carpenter, I hope we don't lose that skill. So a moment to think about John on this Tuesday show. Oh, a little something for the Democrats here as I adjust my microphone live on the air, which is not a good thing. I won't do it again, I promise. So I was looking at this polling, Monmouth University, one of the big polling factories in this country. Here's the headline. 4 in 10 Dems want Biden to step aside in 2024, but they don't have a favored alternate. So it's a pie chart, so I'll have to describe it to you. But they're talking to Democratic voters in this poll. Not Republicans, not independents. Democratic voters. And basically three results. No preference among Democrats, 30%. Biden run again for his second term, 25%. The biggest slice of the pie, approaching 50%, 44% Biden step aside. Now, I didn't vote for Joe Biden, but majority of Americans did. That's why he's our president. That's how elections work, by the way. Did you know that? You get more votes, you win. Not complaining about it. The more votes you get, and the more you have over the opponent, then you win the election. As much complaining as you do afterwards, they don't hand it to you just because you complain. Imagine that for a second. But the interesting part of this story is, for me, and you can join me, 855-616-1620 if you'd like. If you're a Dem, I'd love to hear from you. This uncertainty about, okay, so who's the replacement for Joe Biden? If indeed 44% of you don't want Joe Biden to do it again, because he's getting old, let's be honest, being his 80s, who are the replacements? Well, Vice President Kamala Harris, 13%. That's not a winnable number. That's not winning. That's losing. What about, I call her the school marm, Elizabeth Warren. She's like 70-something. 35% say her. How about Bernie Sanders? Where's his number? I think it's 44%. I could guarantee you this. You run Bernie Sanders against whoever the Republicans put out, whether it's Trump or somebody else, you will lose that election. One, he's not a Democrat. And two, I know there's people that are passionate among Democrats about Bernie Sanders. I don't want him anywhere near the Oval Office. He's a loon. He's a cuckoo. Yeah, I get there's this growing faction of people that hate capitalism and seem to endorse socialism or social democracy, whatever they call it. I don't want Bernie Sanders in the White House, let alone serving in the Oval Office as president. Does that make me too harsh? I don't know. Dave joins us from Sockville. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Am I too hard on Democrats, Dave?
Probably not. I mean, I don't know. I'm a little concerned about Joe, too, because I do think he's a little old, but I'm a little worried that we don't have anybody else that could be the Republican, whoever it be.
Mm-hmm. Well, give me some names, Dave.
Having said that, what's that?
Give me some names.
Well, Newsom in California I think would be good. There's a Democratic mayor, I think, of Baltimore or somewhere that would be good, but none of these guys are big enough profile that I think they'd do well. Right. I just want to say this. I love your show. I feel, as a pretty hardcore Democrat, that you and I could sit down and have a really reasonable conversation. We wouldn't agree on everything, but we agree on a lot of things.
That's because we're normal, Dave.
We could get a lot done.
We're normal. That's why.
Well,
that's where most people are, even though you don't hear that enough.
You know, and I think people ought to be reminded of certain things. I mean, here's an example. The interstate road system went in during the Eisenhower administration by a Republican. People were complaining, oh, my God, how are we ever going to pay for this? We're going to have to pay to maintain it. Where would we be without that?
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that got approved was because we were worried about being able to move around our military in times of war. And so it's like we have to get together as a country and sit down and talk. Like I said, if you and I sat down, I'd point out right away, just as a fig leaf or whatever, that there's things that Biden does that I don't agree with. You know, I think that'd be a good starting point. But we need to bring more civility in this country and have conversations and get along.
I couldn't say it any better than that, Dave. Thanks for the call. I mean, I appreciate the kind words. Who doesn't want to hear great words? But to his point, most of us in this country are in this vast middle. Some leaning left, some truly in the middle, some independents, some switch back and forth, and then some leaning right. And then there's this whack job extreme left and this wing nut extreme right that get all the attention, saying stupid things like cancel the election, let's have an election do-over, let's be socialists and give everything away for free, having no understanding of how budgeting works or deficit impacts the future generations. Sure, would we all want free stuff? Who doesn't? But that's not living in the real world. So Dave and I, as he correctly pointed out, we could sit down and have these conversations, but that doesn't happen because what do we know about politics in this country? It's one way or the other. And I raised this point yesterday. I'm going to close with this before I go to break. We are approaching the nightmare scenario, whether you're a Democrat who has angst about Joe Biden run again, at least almost half of you do, or Donald Trump, of all people, coming back for the third time with a couple convictions potentially hanging around his neck for conspiracy, election conspiracy, lying, whatever it is, or not. Maybe just have the charges, never get convicted. Who knows? Maybe Biden will pardon him. Who knows what could happen? This happened before. And all the idiocy of all of that, that would be our choice. And all those Republicans and conservatives who are right now starting to say, oh, this Trump thing is worrisome. So tell me then, I asked this question yesterday, what are you going to do? You going to vote for Joe Biden or not vote? That's your choices. Maybe write in like I did. Or are you going to vote for a crazy person? Now, keep in mind, crazy people can actually do real things that you like and function in society. That doesn't mean they're not crazy. That doesn't mean they're not mean-spirited. Doesn't mean they're not vindictive. Is that what you want? So, Dems, who is your guy or girl? If it's not Biden, who is it? And as Dave said, he couldn't even point to somebody other than Newsom of California and a mayor on the East Coast. And Republicans, if not Trump, who? That's the dilemma we face as voters. And I would argue over and over again, there's enough idiocy in politics. Let's not contribute to it by adding more to the mix. That's a bad choice. Now, who would win in that situation? I'm guessing Biden would win a second term just from 50,000 feet. But nothing is absolute. Nothing is absolute. But all the rest of the choices, who knows? We need better choices. We're not getting that. We are definitely not getting that. Thanks for all the great texts and calls today, by the way. We'll take a break. We'll see what Jeff Wagner is going to talk about. Do a final look at the show poll. That's all coming up right here on WTMJ. Closing time. We'll take one final look at our show poll today for this Tuesday. A heavily armed shooter killed three children and three adults at a private Christian school in Nashville yesterday. What is your immediate reaction to the story? Thoughts and prayers, 17%. Interesting. Our leaders are clueless, which is something I agree with, 33%. And lots of guns, no surprise, 40% is our winner so far. Still time, much time, 19 hours left to vote. We'll give you a kind of an updated tally in the morning. Almost 400 votes already, so thanks to each and every one of you who voted on our show poll. Don't forget tomorrow, Ask Steve Anything in the 11 o'clock hour. Lots more great conversation. You guys were amazing today. We spent a lot of time on our first topic, which is the mass shooting in Nashville. And just to get a sense, there's a lot of anger out there, but I get the sense, hopefully, that there's an understanding that that anger and that upset can be used in a positive way, because the last thing we need is more vitriol and more violence. So hopefully there's an understanding. And as I said earlier in that conversation, the decisions we make on really complex stories like this, not just individuals who we vote for, who we put in office, but the actual electeds who make decisions based on these stories, what do we do to deal with those realities? There's a lot of things, very complex. Sorting that mess out requires real work, not jaws japping, but actual real work. Finding some common ground here, whether it was the story from Michigan where the parents of the shooter charged with involuntary manslaughter, good first step. Whether it's committing real dollars, I pointed out, Senator, I'm not a big fan of Ted Cruz, actually had a bill on the floor last year. Billions of dollars for mental health went nowhere. Difference between talking and action. And that's hopefully where this story goes next. Am I confident about that? I'm not sure. But that's the question we should all be asking. What do we do is a fair question after anything like this. But really, what have we done is the more important question. All right. That's it for me. Jeff Wagner is up next. What are you going to talk about today, Jeff?